This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
Logging does not mean typing at a computer back then. We were hand logging.
And Garrett Wright.
We are bringing back some bad memories here.
Screens are everywhere, from Times Square to in-venue. Diane Gonzalez-Ferranti recently joined Daktronics after a couple decades with the Pistons. We explore the new opportunities she sees for sports to extend beyond the current in-bowl experience and open new doors using technology.
And let me go to time.is. We're going to do a little sync clap here. You don't need to worry about it, Diane. It's just on our stuff since we're recording locally on our channels. Let me know when you guys are ready.
I'm ready whenever.
All right.
Let's go at 07.
How did you guys get together on this? What's the string here that ties everybody together?
Nebraska.
We all went to college together and worked at Husker Vision together through college.
Jeff Schmall, one of my favorite human beings. The originator of the tunnel walk, right? Everybody has copied that tunnel walk, present company included.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited to be joined today by Diane Gonzalez-Ferranti, executive producer of creative services for Daktronics. Thanks for coming on, Diane.
Thanks for having me.
So, want to start off with your background. You're new to Daktronics as of July this year, correct?
Yes, end of July, really August. I think it was August 1st that I started, but yeah, right
August 1st. There. And but before that, you have a long history with teams, specifically with the Detroit Pistons. Why don't you go through a little bit of your background and what brought you to Daktronics in the first place?
Yeah, well, I always start out by saying I've been a Daktronics end user forever, for decades. So I feel like, you know, it was an easy switch. But I started out with the Detroit Pistons at the Palace of Auburn Hills and went through a few championships with them. During my tenure with Palace Sports and Entertainment, which is the umbrella company, we went through a period of we owned the Tampa Bay Lightning for a while. We had a team in the WNBA called the Detroit Shock. We had an IHL hockey team called the Detroit Vipers. We had a couple of indoor soccer leagues and about four or five outdoor amphitheaters. So it was a really busy time that was a long time, but seemed to really fly by. So it's funny when I say I've been with the Pistons for so long, it's really I've been with the Pistons plus for a really long time. So lots and lots of fun and lots of great experiences there.
So how did that, you know, obviously a load of experience there, how did that prepare you for this role at Daktronics, and what were the differences from what you were doing with the Pistons in that organization versus what you're doing now for Daktronics?
I think the biggest thing is it gave me a really good perspective because I come at it from the team side. And while we at Daktronics have, you know, customers in every single application you could imagine. I mean, that's part of the interesting part we can get into later is it's not just sports. It's sometimes it's anything but sports with Daktronics. But when you talk about, you know, the big venue installations and the sporting teams, I've been where they're at. I've already experienced where they're at. You know, right before I left the Pistons, we had moved from the Palace of Auburn Hills to Little Caesars Arena. So I had literally just gone through a move and just gone through a brand new installation, which is what all of our, you know, customers are going through. And I think that kind of prepared me greatly for what I was going into. The other part of Daktronics that I think a lot of people don't know is that we have a really robust event production business. You know, we have 15 venues out there that the event producers in the venues work for Daktronics. So when you look at it from that standpoint as well, I've been where they've been too. So you combine that, you know, content creation and the event production sides of the business that I've been in for such a long time. And I think that was really kind of a great recipe to put me on the other side. It made an easy pivot for me, I guess, is the best way to say.
So being in executive producer of creative services role, how Are you specifically dealing with elements on the creative services side? Are you doing input on the initial, you know, design and look of a board? Where does that line, where does your line start when a new job is coming out and somebody comes to you, and speaking specifically for sports here, and says, here's where we need you to start your role at? Where does that line start at?
Well, I think that's a little bit to be told because I'm so new, but I will tell you just in my short time, it's a little bit of all. Like, certainly we have an extremely experienced sales team and a team of engineers and designers who go in and do some pretty amazing designs. The thing about Dectronix that I absolutely love is they are so collaborative. So yes, they do include us in on meetings a lot and say, hey, here's what we're thinking about for this particular building. Here's what's happening in this particular building. You know, most every installation that we do, they are interested in us at least helping with getting the content up and running. And part of that, that's really important, and I think this is the secret sauce to Dectronix that not a lot of people know, is while we have a very, very robust creative team, you know, we've got a huge array of talent and different talents in all of our artists and designers and creative directors. We are also lockstep with the engineering staff. So, you know, we talk sometimes I talk more with engineers than I do with the actual artists on how the displays are going to work and how we're going to manage the content that we put in. You know, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the content that we created for the Seattle Kraken at Climate Pledge Arena. And that really played into that a lot because the boards were massive. The files, as you can imagine, the files for the content were massive, and making sure that they played without any stuttering and without any disruption. I mean, that can be difficult on a small system. Now you magnify that, you know, times 1 million, and you really run into some technical, I won't say technical issues, but as long as you're smart about it and you go into it saying, okay, from an engineering standpoint, how is this going to work? How's this going to play back? And we did that before we even created picture number one when we went to Seattle. So I think that is really, really important, especially these days. And at Dectronix, we are really good at merging the creativity and the technology.
I mean, that feels like as good of a lead-in as anything to me to ask about that integration there with the Kraken. I mean, can you take us through that process and what that was like working with, you know, something brand new and how you all came about that process?
Well, first off, Johnny Greco, who is one of the kings of this industry and one of my dear, dear friends, and just he is creative beyond. And as you know or don't know, he is responsible for the creative for the Seattle Kraken. And, you know, we had conversations about a few things, kind of Kraken based, just kind of off the, you know, just here and there. And then I started working for Dectronix. And when I started working for Dectronix, then they had this massive atrium, and he had a vision. He had a really great vision for what he wanted the experience to be. And it really is an immersive experience in this atrium. When you go down the escalators, I'll try to paint the picture using words, but when you come into the arena, you know, Climate Pledge Arena is under the ground, right? So you enter at street side, and then you take an escalator down into the seating area. Well, when you're going down these escalators, on either side of you, there are these massive, massive video walls. And when I tell you they're massive, I always tell people, it's if you can imagine a video board like the length of an airplane, that's how long these video boards are. And they take up the entire wall of this atrium. So what they wanted, and what the vision from the Kraken was, is to create this immersive experience where you felt like you were going underwater, right? Where you were going under sea level, which is kind of so almost like a window into what you would be seeing out in the Puget Sound or whatever, you know, is out there. So we, you know, took their idea, the Kraken's ideas, and Johnny specifically, and took that to our artist and started kind of throwing it around. And came back with, I will tell you, if you can imagine, at this point, I had been at Dectronix maybe like 2 weeks. And I think the artists all kind of looked at me like, what is she getting us into? Like, what is happening right now? But they played through, they played through really well. So I give them a lot of credit. But we started out to figure out, okay, how could we make this wall work? And how could we make it so the Kraken could constantly update and change it? You know, content can get stale very quickly. So we needed it to be updatable, knowing that the render times on files this big were going to be, I mean, some of our render times, you guys, was the renders themselves would take 8, 10, 12 hours just to render out the stuff. And so we knew that we had to make it versatile. And that's where our engineering staff came in. And that's when we went to our engineers and said, hey, here's what we're thinking. Here's what we want to do. And the engineers, I will tell you, helped us out so much because they made recommendations on file types, file sizes, file everything. And it worked out fantastic because I will tell you, we had very few hiccups when we delivered the content. So if you have the chance, you should all go visit Kraken Pledge Arena. It is beautiful. It is absolutely a beautiful, beautiful arena.
Yeah, I love all the images and things that I've seen so far. Just hearing you describe it, I think the world that we're all living in now, we're trying to create more immersive, whether that's AR, VR, or some of these types of experiences, is not just what happens inside the bowl or around the ice or something like that. Like, you know, you were just describing Johnny's vision, starting from when people walked in the door, to create an experience that people wanted to relive and recreate what was around them and who they are and how they reinforce all that. When you got into this, is that kind of what you were hoping to get into, is a little bit more of these types of experiences, or was there is there something else that kind of led you down this path?
I think for sure, you know, I think the best experience that I had preparing me this from Detroit was that move from the Palace to Little Caesars Arena. And when we made that move, we were able to rethink everything, right? We moved our in bowl experience, and we were able to take that from Auburn Hills and move it into Little Caesars Arena. But then we also had to think about everything that was happening around the venue. And at Little Caesars Arena, there's not as much signage as there is at Climate Pledge Arena, but there's still a really good amount of signage. So walking through that venue, and it's a really, really big venue, we had to rethink what were people going to experience at every moment as they're, what are they going to see? What are they going to feel? And how, and more importantly, how do you want them to feel? And I think that is where the industry is going. And unfortunately, here's what happens. And Justin, you can probably attest to this, but your in-game producers and your producers that work for the team, they're focused on the team, right? So I think from our perspective as Daktronics, you as a show producer can focus on what's happening in the bowl, and then we can come in and help with all of that experiential stuff. And we can help kind of set the tone as you walk in, and we can help with your in-game stuff as well. You know, we're pretty versatile, but I think moving forward, that absolutely is important. And I will tell you, outside of sports, it's even more important. There are people out there doing amazing work, immersive work. And I think it's where sports is going to start looking at everything that's happening outside of that and start saying, okay, how can we bring some of these experiences in to the outside? You know, we're working with a couple of companies that are doing some really innovative things. And some really, you know, when you start talking about things like forced perspective and really kind of the cool graphical elements that people are doing out there, and now you're starting to see sports wake up and be interested, where I think, you know, on the other side of our business, the kind of out of home side of our business, that's been going on for a while. So my good fortune is that I've got a lot of team experience, and now I'm getting a lot of out of home experience as well. So when you merge those together, I think it really makes Daktronics Creative Services kind of a really strong partner in a lot of these situations.
I mean, you talked about your, you know, in-venue experience and bring that to Daktronics. How do you think that has helped you? Besides that, you know, that specific example, how do you think that the experience that you had working there for, you know, for the Pistons and that group for so long has helped you make that transition now into Daktronics?
Well, Well, I think it's twofold. I think it helps our customers as well, but I think it also helped a lot of our internal staff. You know, Daktronics has some really, really talented people that work there. A lot of them, though, they don't have that in-game experience, right? They've been, working, creating content to send out, but they aren't actually putting it into play. They aren't actually hearing the audience response. They aren't actually, knowing what they do. I think they have an idea, but they don't get to witness firsthand how people interact with what they do. And as you guys know, like in Arena, that's what it's all about, is getting that interaction between the content that you're pushing out and the audience and trying to pull out some type of reaction. So I think for a lot of them, my hope is that it was a bit of a breath of fresh air, because I've just brought a completely different perspective than they were used to kind of hearing. Now, I will tell you, they have brought a great perspective to me too, because when you start talking about especially I get so fired up about the technology side of things. And when you listen to our account managers and our project managers, and you hear them talk about the content and the technology, and they bring it together, to me, it's fascinating. And maybe it's because I'm so used to the other side of it, but it is really fascinating the way that now they build the content to fit the screens. And I think we did it on the team side, but I think on the team side, we struggled a little bit, right? So you always had to figure it out. And I remember when we opened Little Caesars Arena and our technical director, he would have to program for days just to get that one little moment where it looped and looked flawless in Arena and would blend with the lights, because now everything's driven off the switcher, right? So he would have the lights, he would have the LEDs, he would have the center hung, he would have all this stuff coming off of his board. And I just remember struggling through that with him and now on the other side, where I see all of these engineers, right, Brock? I see all of these engineers on the other side helping out. And I'm like, yes, where were you guys? You know, so that part of it for me has been really refreshing.
Yeah, I think I had something very similar when I went to Beck. Is I'm the only person at Beck and one of the few integration engineers that I know of. I may be the only, I don't know, maybe not, who worked on the production side, right? And worked games in venue on the operator production side. And I think you're spot on. You know how a show is supposed to work, right? You know what moments work and what moments don't work. You know how people are going to operate, right? And workflows. I think workflows is a big thing I see, at Beck when integrating control rooms, and I'm sure you do at DAC. It's like, yes, okay, here's the file type you need to do, and here's where you need to drop it. But how does that integrate into your overall workflow, right? I think one of the issues that Daktronics has streamlined over the years is it used to be, well, here's the Daktronics island, right? And we have to, everything else is integrated and we can drop straight to it. It's connected to our SAN, what have you. And here's the Daktronics island, and it takes its own file type, blah, 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 blah. But now I think a lot of that, I think Daktronics has moved closer to a lot of the industry, and that it's more integrated. The codecs are a little bit more seamless, and they take a lot of what everybody else is taking. And on top of that, protocol wise, it's easier than ever to trigger Daktronics. You talk about the switcher, and DAC now uses ROS talk. A lot of venues use ROS switchers, right? And even if they don't use a ROS switcher, if they use a Grass Valley or something like that, it speaks ROS talk, right? So standardizing these protocols across, I think, and DAC helping lead the way on that is extremely important from a production side. Because you're right, you don't want to spend 6 hours using six different protocols to try and trigger something and time it all up. And they're all TCP and they all have different little delays in them. And you got to try and time those delays and hope they're consistent. I think, bridging that gap between production and engineering is extremely important. Another thing that, and I'm not sure, and this is not me saying DAC struggles with this, this is me saying I would struggle with this if I was in a creative services role at DAC. How do you keep the creative fresh from team to team when you're working on specifically sports, right? And it can be so easy to be like, here's a game in progress, right? I've made one this year and I'm just going to copy and paste it across the board for other teams, right? How do you keep that content fresh, especially on, in my opinion, stat-driven content that can be very like, okay, here's our stat look. This is just our stat look, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Every DAC arena I go to that has DAC creative services, you know, it's different. There's something fresh. What's your mindset going in and trying to keep those ideas fresh and not just fall into the, well, we've made one stat look and we're going to use it again mentality?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I will tell you, this is one of the areas that I was unaware of when in coming to DAC. Sadly, I shouldn't have been, but I was unaware. We have, I would bet that we have the largest arsenal of graphic artist talent that you'll find anywhere. And we, I mean, it, our skill level, our talent level, our styles, our, we have such a diverse group of artists that what our account managers are really good at doing is sitting down and talking with, you know, whoever they're talking with, whether it's, you know, the Patriots or the Buccaneers or, you know, the Kraken. And we really do a good job of listening and listening to what the client's looking for. And then what we do is we look for an artist that their style lends itself to what we're doing. And I'll tell you a story. When we did this Kraken underwater scene, I'm going to go back to the Kraken a lot because it kind of consumed my world for a couple of months. But when we talk about the Kraken, one of the things that you see underwater is all of these wildlife, right? So there's an orca that goes through. There's some fish that goes through. You know, you might see a Kraken eye and then it scares the fish away and they go running. And there are seals and there are divers and there are all these, like, we call them actors. There are all these actors that are involved in the scene. Well, we knew that we had one artist in particular, his name's Monty. We had one artist in particular who was really, really good at doing characters. He was just, it's like one of those things. It's his passion. It's his love. He digs doing it. He's really good at it. So we knew that we wanted to bring him in on this scene to incorporate a lot of those artists. And because we had somebody on staff that was passionate about this, it just made the scene that much better. So I think that's what we try to do. We try to look for the style that the clients are looking, that the customers are looking for. And then we try to blend that with the skill sets that we have internally and externally. We have a number of freelancers that we use as well. Mostly we go with our in-house artists, but if there was a skill set, if there was something that somebody was really looking for, we would, you know, better serve them than ourselves. So yeah, I think that's how we keep it fresh. I do. I think we combine artists too. You know, on that Kraken project, at one point we had probably 10 separate artists working on it. That was pretty heavy when you think about it. I didn't realize coming into Dactronics it was that heavy.
So when you talked about the engineering feats and the challenges that you were going to face with that project, given the board size, the file size, and as you work through all of that, do you temp build something somewhere to test against, or how do you approach that process before you actually get on site and expect things to work as you are hoping they do?
Yes, absolutely. And that's where I was talking about our project managers earlier, and that's really their role. And our project managers, the second that the artists started designing, they started building test content that we could run the test content and prove out our theories that we had worked on with engineering, right? So we talked with engineering about how we were going to run it. And then the project managers developed content that would then test those theories. So the second that those boards were fired up, we had test content up and running and were able to kind of just verify that it was going to behave the way that we felt, the way that we were building the content. Super important. And again, I would tell you that it's the power of Dactronics, like being able to cover that job at all positions, right? So we were creating the content that was going on. We were in constant communication with the installation team on the ground, the guys who were actually building the board. They got so sick of hearing from us, hey, can we test today? Can we test today? Can we test today? But they were awesome, and we were in constant communication with them. So we knew the second that those boards were going to be fired up, we had the test content ready to roll. We had already verified with the engineering staff. And I will tell you, it was a tight turnaround for the project in Seattle. It was a very tight turnaround, and we were able to deliver it on time. So, you know, hats off to everybody at Dactronics. And that is so far beyond me, because like I had just shown up. So I really didn't, you know, I was still learning my way around our software, but hats off to the entire team that kind of worked together to pull that off.
You had touched a little bit on content getting stale, and I think that's a challenge across the board, not just in content seen on boards, but also content that's distributed on social and some of those kinds of things. When you're working towards creating this content and loops, I guess how many iterations or different options, or how do you do like extended loops? How do you approach that to keep it a little bit more fresh?
Well, I think it's different with every team, you know, and I think as you were talking, a project that we did for the Oregon Ducks comes to mind that I actually didn't work on. It happened before I got there, but you know, the Ducks have they wear different uniforms all the time, right? You guys may know more about that than I do, but so when we were building content for them, they needed versatility because they never really knew what color uniform they were going to wear, right? So we built them a palette that just went through a myriad of different colors and styles and everything so that they could have kind of a library built up. We're really into building people's libraries. And we think that that's super important when you go into a season or you go into a year. You want to have some elements that are kind of evergreen that you can kind of use whenever. And then you want to have your elements that are specific to that moment in time and that place and that vision for the night. But, you know, like I know back when we first moved into Little Caesars Arena, we built three completely different looks for the Pistons. Just so every night when you come into the arena, you would get a different look. And I think a lot of teams are going that way. And I think at Daktronics, we have the versatility to be able to deliver, different looks like that when warranted. And the stuff with Oregon turned out so well. It's really, really, really sharp. They did a great job with that.
So you talked a little bit earlier about the projects outside of sports. And you obviously have experience outside of sports with the ownership group. And you said you've directed a lot of concerts and things like that. But what has been the most like out of left field from our perspective that you've had to provide creative services for at Daktronics that maybe we wouldn't think of?
Yesterday, I was on a call with a gentleman who was in Paris, and we were talking about a gas station in Morocco. So if that gives you any indication, it's crazy. I told a friend of mine, I said last week on one day I was on a call with a gentleman who was in Spain. The next day I was on a call in the UK. And then the next day I was setting up that call from Paris. I was like, what? Like, it's so international. It's so big, you know? We've been on calls with our Daktronics group in Shanghai. Like, it's just, I think that opening my mind to everything else that's out there has been one of the most refreshing things for me to be at Daktronics, because they're just in every conversation. And I would say, like, and you guys, the other thing I'll tell you about Daktronics, they are the nicest people. Like, everybody I work with is so super nice. It's just, I can't say enough nice things about this company. They're fantastic and so nice, but so diverse and into so many things. And I will tell you, when we were on the call with the people who were looking for content for their gas station screens, they were building extensive screens at this gas station. We were able to bring two other people on the call, like right away, who had better answers than we did and who could help us work through it. So it's just, The collaboration is endless, and the lengths, the service that Daktronics can supply is endless. It's crazy. It's crazy good.
I'm just curious, you know, Diane, you know, you've been in this industry for a while. You've worked with teams, you've worked with Daktronics now, but how did you get into this? I mean, how did video and content first become a path for you personally?
So It's kind of a funny story. So I was in college. I was like a freshman in college. Like I had barely gotten into college, and they opened the Palace of Auburn Hills, and I wanted to be a theater major. I wanted to be an actress. And so I started in down the theater route, and I want to say it was my second semester in school. I needed an elective. I just needed an elective, and I could take a broadcast class that would apply to my theater major and as an elective. So I just took this broadcast class on a whim, and I sat next to a guy who was doing an internship with the Pistons. Well, I had just the week before been to the Palace for the first time. I went to see Def Leppard. Yes, I was at Def Leppard. And that surprises you guys, admit it. That surprises you guys a little bit that I went to see Def Leppard.
It's fantastic. I love it.
I was at a Def Leppard concert and they were running the Center Hung video board. And I was taking this broadcasting class and looking at the Center Hung video board. And I thought to myself, well, somebody's got to operate that. Right? So I'm going into broadcasting. I have no idea what I'm going to do, but I'm like, okay. So then as happenstance happens, I sit next to this guy who's doing an internship for the Pistons. I was like, oh, wow. I said, I was just at the Palace. I said, I'd really like to do an internship like that. And he came in the next day and he goes, Diane, there's an internship available. And I was like, really? I'm in. So I hadn't even started school. I hadn't even started college. And I landed this internship at the Palace working for the Pistons. And I just simply never left. So it was right when they had opened the Palace. We went from 45 employees that year to 250 employees the next year. So it was literally like right place, right time. I did finish my college degree while I was working for the Pistons. I would go part-time to college at night. So I did end up getting my degree, but I had all this work experience. I used to tell everybody, you know, my friends all talk about their fraternity and sorority experiences when they were in college. And my fraternity and sorority experience was with the Bad Boys on the road winning NBA championships. So a little different experience for me, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
I mean, what was that like being on the road with a team like that? I mean, at that age, that had to be an unbelievable experience.
It was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. And I don't think I appreciated it until years later because it was a lot of work. You know, we would work endless hours. I will tell you, we won the first championship the first year I was there. And the team was in LA, but I was back at Auburn Hills. And I was still an intern. I had no idea, but everybody on the production crew was in LA. And we were coordinating a parade that was going to happen the next day. So I was on the phone with my boss at the time, Pete Skorich. You guys have probably heard of him. He's now with the Red Wings. I was on the phone with Pete Skorich, and Pete and I were collaborating and like producing how this parade was going to go over the phone. And by the way, you guys, I was the only one in Detroit. The only one. So I started cutting highlights that we were going to run because what happened the next day is we had this big ticker tape parade down Woodward Avenue in Detroit, but then they were coming back out to the Palace for a rally. And we had to produce the content for the rallies. So I was basically just doing B-roll roll-ins for all the players. It wasn't any big deal. But as an intern, I remember walking in the studio. I worked for 29 hours straight. I did not sleep. So from the time the Pistons won the championship until the parade the next day, I absolutely did not sleep at all. And I remember walking into the control room, and as I was watching it out, I realized I had this epiphany that the stuff I had stayed up all night working, not only was it running on air, which you guys all remember the first time your stuff runs on air. It's a big deal, no matter what. Not only was my stuff running on air, but it was running on every single network in Detroit. So every big channel, the four big ones, had all taken our feed and it was rolling on this. So I remember A, being so tired, but B, thinking, oh my heavens, like I stayed up all night and now it's running. But not only is it's running on all of the networks. It was like such a big deal. So then we went upstairs, we had a party. And as we were walking out, Pete looked at me and he said, so you want a job? And I was like, sure. And he's like, all right, come back Monday and we'll talk about a job. That's how it started. Way more information than you wanted to know, right?
No, that's unbelievable.
No, that's exactly the amount of information I wanted to know. That's unbelievable. I mean, what a story. I can't imagine, you know, being that age and getting like, I remember that. I remember I went to Nebraska and working in their in-house video department while I was in school, and you know, ESPN would come to town and I would cut like a tiny little B-roll package of something for ESPN, you know, a 10-second little nothing. And I would see it roll and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. Like, it's such a different feeling when your stuff makes air on, you know, either a lot of, you know, big local networks in a metro or, you know, an ESPN or something. It's just, you never forget that. I hear the excitement in your voice still. And I think that's what's so cool.
Yeah, it's a big, I think it's a big deal for everybody. I think, you know, I still get excited talking about it. And my mother, I will tell you, the first probably 10 years that I worked for the Pistons, we did like a weekly magazine show, you know, like every team did one back then. And my name would roll at the credits at the end. And I will tell you, it aired Sunday nights at midnight, and my mom would stay up till 12:25 every Sunday night so that she could see my name roll through the credits. I'd be like, Mom, you can just record it. She'd be like, no, I'd like to watch it. Like, okay. So yeah, good times.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you
back against those Boston Celtics.
I was going to say you've experienced a couple championships along the way, not only the early 90s, but also the early 2000s teams. Any memories or recollections from those years and, you know, having that different perspective a decade later?
Well, yeah, 04 was special because we didn't really see it coming, right? We, matter of fact, we went into LA and we made the finals, I think we were all a little surprised. But then we went into LA and won game one. And then I can't remember exactly, but we narrowly won game two. And then we went into LA and I remember thinking, there's no way. No, we did, because we swept them. I think we took that series in four. I remember thinking, there's no way. And then poof, we did it. We won the championship. It was so great. But I was even happier because, you know, I worked for Bill Davidson for 24 years. I think he owned the team that I worked for before he passed away. I think he passed away in like, I can't remember what year, but that was really a special year for Mr. Davidson because that was the year that the Pistons won the championship. He also owned the Tampa Bay Lightning and won the Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then he also owned the Shock in the WNBA and won the WNBA championship all in that same year. So that was a pretty special year to work for him. And he was such an amazing owner. And I was really, really fortunate to work for him as long as I was able to. And just he's such a blessing to so many people. And so that year was particularly special, but partially because of that, because I was so happy for Mr. Davidson, just an owner that deserved everything and had a great year that year. So it was awesome.
That's pretty wild. That's like the special triple crown, you know?
Yeah. It was fun.
So you've talked a little bit about what the work that you've seen and done both with the Pistons and your early time with Daktronix. Where do you see things going? You've talked a little bit about your, you know, seeing things on the outside and what could eventually make its way back to sports. Can you look into your crystal ball maybe a little bit and give us a synopsis of what you think sports is going to latch onto most from what you've seen from the outside?
That's a great question. I think as sports pushes the envelope with content, you know, I've talked about it a lot today. I think the technology plays such an important role in that. And I think, you know, the video screens aren't getting smaller. they're getting more elaborate. And you just look at the twin boards that they put in Seattle, and they're really, really cool. They're even cooler when you see them in person. They are really cool. So I think that a lot of teams are going to rethink the traditional on how they use it. And I think when you start talking about that, the technology then becomes that much more important. And the way you tell a story with the boards and the way you tell a story within that arena proper, I think that's where it's going to change. And I think utilizing the technology with really, really, really great pictures is really, teams are embracing it. Teams are embracing it. And I think even more so than, you know, the out of home people, the teams are embracing that technology. The out of home, you know, they're doing a lot with syncing, like multiple signs and doing big splashy displays. I mentioned forced perspective is really, I mean, we get called at least four times a week to create forced perspective content these days. It's a really, really popular conversation. So I think you're going to see a lot of boards built to have, you know, to for force perspective. So I think those are two areas that I think are it's really kind of heading. Now that's just me speculating, and I've only been at Dectronics a few months. So that's kind of outside looking in, if you will.
Just because I'm on the side of the industry, I know how board shapes get, you know, made. Usually there's an architect and they have an idea and then they work with you guys and they figure out what's feasible, what's not. But from a creative services point of view and a creative point of view, what's your like ideal board design in your head? And I know you've only been there a few months, but what is it, something crazy that hasn't been done yet? Is it something that's already out there that you think is really effective? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
That's a really great question. I think, you know, I think we like a challenge, and, you know, I've spent time on a couple of calls with, I mentioned our project managers in creative services, and Kyle, Jeanette, and Gar are like wizards with that, with layouts and creating that type of look and feel. And if I were guessing what they would say right now, they would say, you know, challenge me. And I think they like a challenge. Like, you know, we met a couple of times just to throw ideas around with in Seattle about those boards and as far as basketball went and where they could, you know, where they could put what. Certainly the boards in the atrium provided a challenge. I didn't even really touch on the upstairs boards in the atrium. They have this column display with a big, huge ceiling display that is really cool. Really, really, really cool. So, and that one was a big challenge because when we went to like lay it out and build the templates for it, we had to kind of shift them around. Otherwise it was distorted the way you were looking up at them. So, you know, I think that, you know, you mentioned, I think the architects and the people who are designing and building the board are getting way more creative. And I think that's going to continue to challenge the people who are creating the content to mesh with those boards. You know, those twins, I don't know exactly what they did, but they're curved on the end, right? So that changes the way that you display the content on it also. So I think, you know, I don't have a really great answer for my favorite board, but I think, you know, being challenged by the design of the boards is what I love.
Well, you touched on the intern, you know, the way that you were able to get an internship with Detroit. And I saw Garrett getting a little giddy because it's all about, you know, you made a connection and networked and talked to somebody who was already there and found your way in the door. Do you have any advice for people who are looking for jobs in sports and want to get their foot in the door?
Well, I will just tell you, like, and this advice comes from a friend of mine. I mentioned Pete Scores, who was the person who initially hired me. He's with the Wings right now, but he always kind of said this, and this is held through years and years, but no matter what you're doing and no matter what situation you're in, there's always something to learn, right? There's always something to learn, even in the most mundane, boring, you know, job or project, there's always something to learn. So everything that you do, you know, do with a vengeance and look for the lesson that you're going to take away from that. And I think that that's really important for people who are kind of coming up in the industry, because as you know, there's a lot of like, you know, I started out logging basketball games and logged basketball games for way too long. And logging basketball.
I want to remind the children today that logging does not mean typing at a computer. Back then, we were hand logging.
We were hand writing. You put it in the tape.
Yeah. I just want people to know.
Yes. Yes. You write the time code down. You have to stop and back it up. And then you write it down. You write a description. Then you have to write the angle. I know now they do it. Now it kind of does it for you. But
We are bringing back some bad memories here.
Yeah, that shuttle. Oh. Yeah, the shuttle.
Right.
Oh, but slapping it and spinning it and oh man.
I know, and you're off and why does time code have to have so many numbers and you know, yeah, I mean it was rough. When we moved out of the Palace, we had files and files and files and files of my handwriting on logs that just got thrown away. It was so sad. But Pete used to always say he learned how to direct a broadcast through logging, right? And if you think about it, that's a really great way to learn, because if you're sitting there, not only are you dissecting what they're doing, but you're dissecting how they're doing, and you're dissecting what angles they go to at what time in the game and at what point, and where they bring replays in and how the timing of the game works out. And you know, there's so much to learn when you think about it and you don't look at it as just that mundane, boring, everyday task, which I wish that I could find an angle like that for my daughters and doing the dishes. Maybe those rules don't apply there, but for logging and things like that in the industry, it's really important. You know, if you're a utility, I always tell the utilities, you know, you're holding the cables and you're making sure that those cables are you know, strung up right correctly. But what's the camera guy doing? Watch the camera guy. Learn from what he's doing. Learn and listen. You know, a lot of utilities get to wear a headset. Listen to everything that they're saying to you, and that's where you're going to get the benefit.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.